The United States government last Friday formally restored diplomatic relations with the government of Myanmar, or Burma as it was known before the ruling military junta changed the nation's name. The restoration of relations came on the heels of an announcement that the Myanmar regime had released 651 political prisoners. Among those arrested as political prisoners in the course of many conflicts are civilian protesters, Buddhist monks, and students. A day before the prisoner release, the government announced a ceasefire in the long-running conflict between the military and ethnic Karen rebels in the east. AFP reports that a presidential order at the end of last year to end fighting against the ethnic Kachin rebels in the north failed to end the conflict there. Around the same time, though, a successful ceasefire was brokered between ethnic fighters of the Shan State Army South and its local government. In the wake of the prisoner release, Myanmar as a state was still not wholeheartedly embraced by the United Nations, which issued a statement that more reforms were needed. In contrast, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was enthusiastic, saying, quote, "This is a momentous day for the diverse people of Burma," and she announced plans to exchange ambassadors with the country. Burma has been in a state of civil war since it was declared independent from British colonial rule in 1948. State violence against ethnic minorities have caused the international community to isolate Burma by imposing sanctions against the ruling government. Hundreds of thousands of Burmese have been displaced by fighting around the nation. Meanwhile, as part of the reforms announced by President Diem Sien, elections are scheduled for April 1st. Burma's most well-known leader and Nobel Peace Laureate, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was released recently after decades of house arrest, has registered to run for office. Joining me on the phone this morning is Edith Mirante. She is a human rights activist, author of Burmese Looking Glass and Down the Rat Hole, Adventures Underground on Burma's Frontiers. Welcome to Uprising, Edith.
Good morning, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, how do you respond to the U.S. government deciding to restore full diplomatic relations based on the release of hundreds of political prisoners?
Well, the United States has had diplomatic relations with Burma all along. We had a functioning embassy, which has actually been very useful for a lot of the dissidents to use as a meeting space. We just haven't had an ambassador since the democracy uprising of 1988, which was brutally suppressed by the regime. So now what will happen is an ambassador for Burma will be proposed. So it's a bit of a recognition that things have been changing in Burma, but it's not going from nothing to diplomatic relations.
Is it a little premature? I mean, the United Nations thinks more reforms are needed, but it looks like the U.S. is quite happy with the current pace of reforms.
Well, the United States is still maintaining its economic sanctions, which ban new investment in Burma and also imports from Burma, and also restrict banking with Burma, which is very important because the generals, the powers that be, have used international banking to launder their profits from multinational companies, like the United States-owned Chevron petroleum company. It's kind of funny when people talk about how isolated Burma has been in the past or the recent past, when in reality, huge multinationals have been there all along, like Chevron and Total from France, companies from democratic countries which very much disapprove of the regime and yet are heavily invested there.
So how do you explain these reforms, not just the release of Aung San Suu Kyi, but the release of these political prisoners, the fact that there's going to be elections on April 1st that Aung San Suu Kyi is going to run in? What is the motivation that the military junta has to make this happen?
Well, the pace of reform and that there's reform at all has certainly surprised analysts who've been watching Burma for decades, like I have. There was a very unfair, unfree election in 2010 in which basically military people changed into civilian clothes to become part of the new parliament. And in the new parliament, 25% of the seats are held by serving military besides that. People really didn't have high expectations of this new supposedly civilian government. But sometime around August, September, some of the people in Parliament started acting like they were actual representatives and asking questions. And around that time, press censorship and internet censorship started to be lifted. And this has opened up just a huge opportunity for civil society, because this is a country that had no freedom of the press, no freedom of speech, even, you know, if you were out in public. And now all of a sudden that has opened up and blossomed. Hmm. Nobody knows quite why that's happened. Aung San Suu Kyi herself has spoken of a trusting kind of a rapport when she's met with the president, Thein Sein, and a lot of this reformism does seem to come from him. So sometimes it's a leadership thing, a de Klerk or a Gorbachev who decides that it's time to reform and open up a country to a freer state.
And now I understand that even if Aung San Suu Kyi's political party wins all the 48 seats that are up for election on April 1st, it's going to have minimal power because the 440-seat lower house of parliament is very heavily weighted with military appointees, with allies of the junta. So is this a sort of a case of allowing minimal freedom just to give the appearance of reform and democracy?
Well, she's, you know, as a political leader, not someone who would be easily marginalized. And there are some very interesting people running for those seats, which were seats that were left open in the last election, including Zaire Thaw, who was a hip-hop star in Burma, which you might not think that Burma has a big hip-hop scene, but they do. And he is a former political prisoner himself. So as well as her, there are some very vocal people, very articulate and impassioned people who, if they do join that parliamentary system, it'll wake it up quite a bit. And there are some ethnic representatives already in the parliament who can kind of form a little bit of a bloc with them. And everyone knows that they also, they have the people behind them. So they have a lot of people power besides.
So, Edith, I understand you were recently in Burma and you have been working on issues of the various ethnic conflicts with the government. How do you explain some of the ceasefires that have been signed between some of these rebel groups from various ethnic communities and the government? And is there still fighting going on?
Well, interestingly, the area where I was in November is that of the Kachin people. They live up in the north near the China and Tibetan borders. And they had been in a ceasefire agreement for 17 years and then broken off from that in fighting last summer. So that warfare is still very much going on. The town where I was in, Liza, is absolutely under siege by the government's forces. And it's led to tens of thousands of what they call internally displaced people, refugees who aren't allowed to go across the border to safety in China. So they're in very difficult situations. Now winter has come on. That's up near the Himalayas. And very, very hard situation for the civilians caught in the conflict. In other areas, negotiations with separate ethnic groups opposing the government have been more successful, and you know, fairly tentative ceasefire agreements have been reached. What the ethnic groups want, though, overall are real peace talks that would lead towards more autonomy and a federal system for Burma with the groups recognized in their own areas.
And how close is the government to essentially offering that type of freedom?
It's not that close yet, but at least they seem to have a negotiating team that's pretty willing to speak with the different groups and that seems trusted by several of the groups so far. But
so,
it's all fairly tentative.
Overall, as somebody who's been working with groups in Burma and has been following this issue, are you cautiously optimistic about Burma's future?
I am. There have been more changes for the positive side in the last few months than in the years and years that I've been involved in Burma. I think, you know, when you have this opening of some civil society, some freedom of speech, and the release of not all political prisoners by any means, but many very important political leaders who have been in prison for so many years, that does create a momentum for further change and for a further setting up of an alternative to the military rule that, Burma's been under since 1962, actually.
How many more political prisoners are imprisoned? Is that number even known?
It's not really known. It varies according to who is keeping track of it. There is an association for political prisoners run by former imprisoned dissidents that does think there are over 1,000 still in prison. And many of these people are on charges which are not necessarily don't seem political, but things like assisting an outlawed organization. And that can just mean that you helped someone from a rebel group or you helped somebody from an underground group. There are many civilians who have been caught in the war zone and are held as prisoners, including women. The use of rape as a weapon of war has been constant throughout military rule in Burma, and it has continued under the present government, very much so in northern Burma where I was. And those women are captives and prisoners as well.
Well, Edith Mirante, we'd love to have you back on to follow this situation, particularly in early April when the elections take place. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Edith Mirante is a human rights activist. She's the director of Project MAGE, which you can find online at projectmage.org. She's also the author of Burmese Looking Glass and Down the Rat Hole, Adventures Underground on Burma's Frontier. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "Change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle." That's MLK. That's Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day.